Money FM 89.3, best of the evening runway. Under the radar.
You're listening to Money FM 89.3, and it's now time for Under the Radar with me, Chua Tian Tian. Now, today we're going to bring you an inside look into a local apparel maker turned investment holding firm. Now, founded in 1951, Sing Loon started as a textile trading firm along Circular Road and has seen its business transform over the decades. Now, for one thing, the firm expanded into apparel manufacturing in 1968 when the second generation owners took over. Now, over the years, Sing Loon evolved to become the manufacturer of top outdoor and sportswear brands such as the North Face and Under Armour, and its annual revenue a whopping $185 million as at 2016. But as people say, change is the only constant, and Sing Loon has yet changed once again. It merges textile manufacturing business SL Global with Crystal International Group in Hong Kong in 2016 to become the second largest apparel manufacturer in the world. Now, today, Sing Loon Holdings is known as a privately owned investment holding firm with business interests worldwide. Its portfolio includes three main verticals: real estate holdings, industrial and business services, as well as investments and private equity. But what were the reasons behind the move to divest SL Global, and what does the divestment of the apparel manufacturing business mean for the firm? What is it focusing on next? Well, lots of questions. And joining me here in the studio is Mark Lee, CEO of Sing Loon Holdings. Mark, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Great to have you on board, Mark. And we've briefly talked about how Sing Loon started out as this textile trading firm along Circular Road in the 1950s. Of course, a lot has changed since first being how it entered into apparel manufacturing in the 1960s, manufacturing for top brands like Under Armour. From there, you guys have become an investment holdings firm. So let's hear from you. How would you describe Sing Loon's value proposition and business model over the years?
So I guess for Sing Loon, change has always been constant. So if you've rightly pointed out that our family started as a textile trader, that was by my grandfather in 1951. And at that time, we were mainly dealing with textile products from Indonesia, bringing them to this region over here. My father actually studied in Japan.
What?
And after he came back, he decided to diversify or go basically downstream and into apparel manufacturing. We were very much focused in the European markets at first, and we've got quite a bit of success there. We were one of the top exporters to France at that moment.
Wow.
So from textiles, we've then journeyed into apparels, first into Europe and then into the US. At that time, the company was really focused very much on the fashion trade. Brands like Esprit, brands like The Gap, departmental stores like Macy's, Bloomingdale's, Disney. These were some of our clients that basically came to us for contract manufacturing.
Wow, okay.
I actually started to join the business only in 1999 after working outside for a few years. As in a totally different field in IT, actually. And when I rejoined the company business, I wanted to basically turn the business into a larger one. The reason is because in this at that point in time, I knew that you really needed scale in order to be more successful. So contract manufacturing is a very you really have to focus on productivity and efficiency, right? So, and you need to have certain skill in order to employ the best in class. So that was really on my mind. How do we get bigger and better? And so we started coming out from fashion into a mega trend that I saw, which was sportswear. And we can talk about that later.
Sure.
But basically, the transition from fast fashion fashion into sportswear is something that the company still deeply believes in. In terms of identifying megatrends that will remain relevant in the next 30 to 50 years, right? And this is probably one of the key focus in all our investments. So what do we believe in? We believe in internationalization, like what I've talked about. We've went into markets early. We believe in internationalization, even of our operations, both in our customers as well as in our operations. We moved into Malaysia, Sri Lanka, Vietnam, Cambodia, China, quite early.
Yeah.
And we believe in the ASEAN growth story, that's for sure. And with that, with a combination of these factors, we decided that, look, we have done so well in offshoring our operations. Why did we diversify then? We have done so well in offshoring and internationalization. Our teams, our Singaporean friends, colleagues, our Malaysian friends, colleagues who's been with me for so many years have all gone away with me. So I lived in Vietnam and was there since 2003. I went to Cambodia since 2006. And as time passed, I realized that many of them have two key concerns. The first is their children wanting to, they needed to come back. The second one is aging parents. So offshoring was something that we have done quite well. Now, Sing Loon's focus was how do we then onshore back jobs, onshore back certain sectors that we feel will be relevant.
And that is through investment holdings, becoming an investment holdings
firm. That is correct. And that is the real key driver of why we decided to diversify into various portfolios, because we wanted to anchor back within Singapore businesses that we feel would remain relevant as the economic structure of Singapore changes.
Right. Since you're on the topic, don't mind me asking this about your business transformation, because in 2016, Sing Loon was already producing apparels for top brands Under Armour, Puma, Oakley, some of the brands seen in the Rio Olympics, right? And in fact, CNBC said back then that you guys were generating annual revenue of $185 million. Very good position. At that point in time, you decide to merge your textile manufacturing business, SL Global, with Crystal International Group in Hong Kong. So were workers your only consideration at that point? What were the other considerations that resulted in that move at a point where, to a layman, the firm is in a very good position on its own?
Yeah, so that's a great question. I think in the numbers reported, 185 million US was actually, we did not end the year yet. So, you know, it was a previous number. We actually hit a peak of about 235 million US at that point in time. And yes, we were doing quite well. We had a strong position within all our customers. But you have to understand perhaps the growth of SL Global, our apparel manufacturing division arm, pre-2005. Pre-2005, the entire world was actually governed by a multi-fiber agreement, meaning that if you wanted to export into various parts of US and Europe, you cannot just export freely. You're actually governed by quota.
Yeah.
And this quota actually kind of protected the exporters. You don't need to be efficient. As long as you have quota, the buyer will come.
Yeah.
But things changed because the multi-fiber agreement, thereafter, it became obsolete. The WTO stepped in and said that, look, this thing will expire in 2005. Another game changer was actually China joining WTO in 2001. And at that time, there was a lot of speculation of how this would change our entire industry, just like how Y2K changed or accelerated certain changes in the technology space, right? So, I joined the company in 1999, and actually part of my job was to position, together with my father, the company post-2005. Now, you'd be shocked to see that in 2000, 7.9% of total apparel imports into US was from China, just 7.9%. But by 2010, it reached a peak of 42%.
Wow.
China became the number
six, seven
one.
Times.
Yeah, wow. Number one exporter into the US in such a short span of time, and by quantity. But cost also dropped dramatically, meaning the pricing for certain categories dropped as much as 40%. Right. Of course, we couldn't tell how big that climb would be and how fast the drop would be. But it was very fortunate that it was during that period of time. Our turnover was only probably Sing 75 to 80 million at that stage in 1999. And we knew that China has cotton. We knew that they had mega-scale factories. We could not be competitive in that specific segment. That's the reason why we identified two mega-trends. One is people wants to age well, and there is an aging population in the world. The second is, as they want to age well, they would need to exercise and watch their diet. So exercise became a key driver of sportswear. And we sort of latched, I kind of latched into this mode, right? Because sometimes you can ask yourself, how many of us own a Gap t-shirt versus how many of us own a Nike t-shirt, for example, right? And the answer is quite clear.
Yoga pants as well.
Yoga pants as well, to your point, correct. So with that, we decided, look, let's continue to scale, but let's scale it in countries that we feel would be competitive. That's the reason why we went to Vietnam. And at that time, I also went to Cambodia, like I said, in 2006. And the reason was because we looked at also free trade agreements that countries actually sign. So Cambodia had a agreement with the EU at that point in time. It's called the Everything But Arms. They had this EBA. That allowed them to ship goods duty-free into the Europe.
So eventually in 2016, you decided that even apparels is something that is not worth doing. It's better to bring your workers back?
It is actually not that it's not worth doing. It is two things, right? My first milestone when I entered the company was to hit 150 million turnover because we needed scale. And then when we said that we're going to sportswear, it means that we now changed ourselves to be in a position of a big mega trend. But secondly, if you understand this, sportswear it relies more on innovation and technology rather than low cost of manufacturing because there's technology involved in the design. How do we make you feel less hot when you are exercising? How do you create more stretch for comfort, for example? And then after the great financial crisis, there was a consolidation of vendors, which worked actually to our benefit. That's why we managed to scale again. Right? So the S-curve came the second time for us. But then we also realized one thing. We needed even more scale because now our clients now wants two key things from us. One, you need to do at least 100 million US with one customer.
Right?
Because they don't want so many vendors. They want to be able to be like a one-stop shop for them. The second is our industry actually recognized sustainability 14, 15 years ago. We were already monitoring our outputs in electricity consumption, water consumption, paper consumption, diesel consumption. All this was done 15 years ago. And brands actually push us to constantly reduce energy, reduce our wastages. And then they started putting in new guidelines for us in terms of green buildings, example. So with that, right, one factory in the past I can build, I probably need 15, 20 million US. But now, it needs at least 30 to 50 million US to build. The second thing that the customer now want is because they want a one-stop shop focus, they need you to even go further downstream into fabric manufacturing. Wow. Remember, I only play in the apparel manufacturing part.
Yep.
We were very good in that. We went from contract manufacturing to OEM to ODM, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
And then I asked myself, okay, to build a fabric mill, I would need at least 100 mil US. So that risk became bigger.
Yeah.
And being a family business, you have to understand that I have extended family involved. And
there are considerations.
There are considerations of risk. And to be fair, it is absolutely valid because many of them have worked many years to build up a business and we do not want to bet the farm on it.
Mm-hmm.
So the Crystal Group was a very good friend, mm-hmm. family friend of ours. We realized that our values was the same, the culture was the same. Even the way that we run our operations, I wouldn't say 100% the same, but it was, and it were much bigger.
Yeah.
And instead for us to capex further, we had a discussion. I said, hey, why can't we transform your existing factories that were doing fast fashion into sportswear facility? Then in this way, we basically synergize our, we have the customers, you have the capacity, we are able to synergize certain operations. And I would have to say that if there was ever a textbook Harvard case study for
apparel's
merger successor, it would probably be one of them, right?
Okay.
So after the merger, even 2 years ago, our turnover in the Singapore office, which still holds the sportswear office, sportswear business, we delivered a staggering US $520 million in turnover for sportswear.
Wow. This so, after the merger?
After the merger, just 2 years ago, right? So obviously it is, it's a beneficial gain for everyone. And so we think that this was a good case study. We felt that it helped de-risk certain family concerns. And at the same time, we're able to realize the full potential of both companies. And I believe that there's no right or wrong. I guess you have to ask yourself as an owner of a business, would you want to be 100% owner of a mid-sized business or a smaller percentage of a very large business?
Yeah.
So I think I chose the latter. And I think that's worked extremely well for us even till today.
So let's take a look at the road ahead or the status right now, right? Mark, Sinlin's portfolio, you have three main verticals, real estate holdings, industrial and business services, as well as investments and private equity. So take us through the verticals with more granularity. Any examples of your investments in the different verticals?
So again, back to the what we believe in, right? We believe in internationalization. We believe in the ASEAN growth story. We believe in identifying mega trends. And what are we good at? Well, we are good at industrials, right?
Mm-hmm.
We've started from a small outfit. We were SME as well.
Yeah.
And then we grew to a LLE, a large local enterprise. And at my peak, I had, at the point of divestment, or the merger, it was about 6,000 employees. And you have to understand, we were operating out from Malaysia, China, Vietnam, Cambodia, Sri Lanka, Singapore. And we understand the international markets. So this was our strength. And all our customers require compliance to environmental, social, and sustainability goals. And our teams already had the know-how and are skilled in manufacturing. They were trained, they have implemented Lean, Kaizen, TQM manufacturing models, right? And with this strong focus in industrial engineering, it is actually deployable to many relevant or any manufacturing sector. And so to today, when we make an investment, we look at how we can value add to the operations. We have a SWOT team that we send in to actually assist companies that we invest in to review processes all the way from warehousing, shop floor management, ERP implementation, creating dashboards, reporting KPIs that really make the organization more transparent. And many times you will realize that a lot of the employees in the organization, they actually, what they really want is more transparency. Because more transparency means that they can be held more accountable.
Mm-hmm.
And more accountable means that they already know that this is the direction I go. If I do well, I will be well rewarded.
Mm-hmm.
And with that, that allows us to align both our key management teams mm-hmm. as well as ourselves as investors yeah. together. And in the end, we feel that we can create a better quality of life for our employees. And we are able to bring this management know-how together with our private equity partners in terms of changing culture and enhancing processes and efficiencies. Mm. So I guess the second question would be then, why do we partner with private equity
yeah.
partners, right? Like Mizuho. And Mizuho Asia Partners, as an operating partner to them yep. currently, they actually have three private equity funds. Their fund size, they are managing close to, I think, US $750 million today
mm-hmm.
Out of their three funds. Oh, why them? Well, we like the fact that our investment thesis are very similar. We look at companies mm-hmm. that are growing or businesses that are fundamentally good,
yeah.
but they lack succession
mm-hmm.
or they have reached a certain scale,
mm-hmm.
but they want to now make the next S leap, right?
Yeah.
And that's where we come in together with Mizuho and say that, hey, how do we help you to scale from being a SME to a large local mm. enterprise? And I can say that that is the core thesis behind how our industrial arm works today.
Right. I really want to take a look at some recent developments surrounding Xinglun right now, as well as your portfolio companies. Because last year, you announced a co-investment with Demon Asia Private Equity in TS Group. And TS Group is this dormitory operator. It also operates large-scale communities for the elderly. Aside from that, right now, it seems that you're doubling down on your portfolio company, Vectech Engineering, which engage in industrial services like waste treatment and transportation. So what's next for both companies in the near term?
So quite excited about the prospects of both of these companies. We can talk about our accommodation provider, TS Group, that we have done together with Diamond Asia.
Yeah.
We are very fortunate basically to have found TS Group, and the founders of this company is actually old friends of ours.
Yeah.
They have been running the business as a workers' dormitory, foreign mm-hmm. workers' dormitory. And during COVID, they helped in managing some of the key facilities
yeah.
That the government was actually had to deal with during this very challenging times. So we felt that this was important. Now, all these businesses may seem out of where our comfort zone seemed to yeah. be like, right? But actually it's not. Let me tell you why. Because SL Global itself was a large manufacturer, and we are dealing with apparel and textiles. Dealing with apparel and textiles, if you have done some research, you would know that textile and apparel is one of the larger environmentally polluted items
yeah,
huh?
yeah.
because of the dyeing and mm-hmm. the chemicals involved. So we have spent a lot of time and know-how dealing with this issue. So waste management has always been within the company itself. Mm. So, and circularity, creating circularity, reducing waste, how do we clean up hazardous waste? This has always been a know-how in the company. So it was a natural progression to double down on our know-how. The second thing is, being a large manufacturer at that stage, and still is, not all our workers come from the area where our plants are.
Yeah.
We manage our own dormitories. So we also have know-how in managing dormitories as well. Whether is it for our management teams as well as for our workers. So we bring that know-how now into our...
into investments.
Correct. And so, like I said, our investment in TS Group together with Diamond Asia Partners was also the same thing, right? We bring that know-how. But there's one thing that we wanted to pivot to was that how do we then now use this know-how of housing large numbers to also providing accommodation for healthcare workers. So you will probably have read recently together with the Assembly Place, we have actually, and the TS Group, we have actually won three of the sites of the Ministry of Health Holdings, MOHH, nursing accommodation tenders as well. So that is our next, I would say next milestone of growth. Which we see. And with that accommodation and housing model, can we make this an exportable model?
Yeah.
Well, we're moving into Malaysia. We're opening a workers' dormitory in Malaysia. We are also going to Saudi in a couple of months to have a look, understand the market there. So this is how we've actually added kind of value into this whole chain. I think the second thing is vector engineering. We've actually been quite excited about the opportunities there. Again, back to the fact that we are already a hazardous waste management company. Just this year, actually, we merged that with Blue Planet Environmental Solutions Group. And we're very excited on the future. And we are also investors in Blue Planet Environmental Solutions. So who is Blue Planet? Well, Blue Planet is a technology-driven waste management platform. It's headquartered in Singapore. And we currently operate out in four countries, Singapore, Malaysia, the UK, and India. And we have projects in 15 countries. We have three divisions: urban mining and remediation. So basically, in simple words, we are the market leading landfill mining and reclamation specialist, right? And we do quite a lot of that in India currently. And we focus on segregating legacy waste into usable products as well as e-waste processing. The second one division that we have is materials recovery. We deal with collecting and multi-material waste management and industrial waste, municipal waste, as well as hazardous waste. This is where I play in. And finally, we look at waste-to-energy conversion as well as biogas. So with that platform, we think that Blue Planet would be in a right position to scale further. I think it is my interest to participate in companies to help them get bigger, better, so that we can generate greater prospects for everyone.
Right. Now, before we let you go, Mark, I really want to talk about this because I believe you told The Edge Singapore in 2015 that you aim to make Sing Lun into American apparel maker VF Corporation, somewhat like VF Corporation, which owns fashion brands like Timberland and was acquired for $2.2 billion in 2011. Of course, that was before you divested SL Global, which is the apparel manufacturing business. So, looking ahead, right, as an investment holdings firm, Mark, what is your grand plan for Sing Lun Holdings? What are you doubling down or focusing on next?
Well, there's no really no grand plan. I think many of you have already heard, right, the old saying that wealth does not pass through the third generation. Hopefully, I don't be that weak link. And so to my point is that many people ask me about this diversification, this transformation, and about the family business. And I always say that, look, I always believe that a family business is the family name. It means that we want to build a good business name that entrepreneurs, our colleagues, our staff, our banks, our partners, they all trust and want to work with. And with that family name, we can build the right business according to the right mega trend for the day or for that generation to come, right? And we will continue to focus on building good teams, great teams that can help entrepreneurs achieve the dreams of expansion, internationalization, and transformation. That's really the focus of SLH today.
Don't mind me trying my luck here, Mark, because we really love talking about money here on Money FM. Mark, so don't mind me asking this. I know as an investment holding firm, you don't look at EBITDA and other metrics of sorts right now, but you look at assets under management. Do you have a growth target in mind, a CAGR in mind, or are you solely looking at preserving wealth for the family business?
I wouldn't say that we are just concentrating on preserving wealth. Growing wealth is definitely part of the agenda. There's always two parts to our business mission, our family mission. Mm-hmm. I think the first is, of course, doing great business, right? Or building great businesses. The second one is philanthropy.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have seen some articles on us, I think we have three key pillars that we support greatly. I think the first is healthcare for the needy. So my father and my grandfather has been very, very involved in Kong Wai Shiu Hospital.
Yeah.
And specifically my father, who has really helped to chair. He is retired now, but he has helped to chair and develop Kong Wai Shiu into one of the larger nursing homes in Singapore today, non-profit nursing homes. And the second pillar that we basically support is culture. And culture and heritage is important to us because we feel that we have benefited greatly from Singapore and Singapore's economic transformation. And we believe that for us to anchor in Singapore, Singaporeans need to have a strong sense of identity of heritage and culture. So we have been active in this. Currently, I'm also chairing the Asian Civilization Museum, as well as a board member at National Heritage Board as well. And then the third is education. We believe that everyone is entitled to a good education, especially the needy families. So we have scholarships in SMU, SUTD, and SIT. So these are the universities that we support greatly. We feel that in order for us to continue our philanthropic drive, definitely we need to continue
to grow the business.
And so we do not want to just keep constant. I think that I'm conscious of the sensitivity of disclosing private financial information, but I would have to say that if you look at some of our partners, Mizuho having a fund size of about US $750 million and being their operating partner, I would not dare say that we have that large a figure, but definitely significant enough to work closely with them on the deal flows as well.
All right. So thanks a lot for the insights, Mark. That was Mark Lee, CEO of Singlun Holdings. Thank you very much for joining us on Money FM 89.3.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at audio.sg or download the audio app. That's AWEDIO, audio at the App Store and Google Play.